The Judges, Deliverers of Israel. This chapter is based on Judges 6-8:10. Satisfied with the territory already gained, the tribes lost their zeal and discontinued the war. When Israel was strong, they put the Canaanites under tribute, but did not completely drive them out. Judges 1, verse 28. On his part, the Lord had faithfully fulfilled the promises he made to Israel. It only remained for them to complete the work of driving out the inhabitants of the land, but they failed to do this. By making treaties with the Canaanites, they violated the command of God and failed to fulfill the condition on which he had promised them possession of Canaan. At Sinai, God had warned them against idolatry. "You shall not bow down to their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their works, but you shall utterly overthrow them and completely break down their sacred pillars." As long as they remained obedient, God would subdue their enemies. "I will send my fear before you. I will cause confusion among all the people to whom you come. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hivite, the Canaanite, and the Hittite from before you. I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest the land become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. Little by little, I will drive them out from before you, until you have increased and you inherit the land. You shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you." Exodus 23, verse 24, 27-33. God had placed his people in Canaan to hold back the tide of moral evil so that it would not flood the world. God would give into the hands of the Israelites nations that were greater and more powerful than the Canaanites. "You will dispossess greater and mightier nations than yourselves. From the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the western sea, shall be your territory." Deuteronomy 11, verse 23-24. But they chose ease and self-indulgence. They let their opportunities slip away for completing the conquest of the land, and for many generations they were harassed by the survivors of these idolatrous peoples, who were like irritants in their eyes and thorns in their sides. Numbers 33, verse 55. The Israelites mingled with the Gentiles and learned their works. They intermarried with the Canaanites, and idolatry spread like a plague throughout the land. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons. And the land was polluted with blood. Therefore, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against his people, so that he abhorred his own inheritance. Psalm 106, verse 35-40. Until the generation who had received instruction from Joshua died out, idolatry made little progress. But the parents prepared the way for the apostasy of their children. The simple habits of the Hebrews had strengthened them with physical health, but association with the heathen led to indulgence of appetite and passion, which gradually weakened the mental and moral powers. By their sins, the Israelites were separated from God, and they could no longer overcome their enemies. So they came to be dominated by the very nations that they could have conquered. They forsook the Lord God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They provoked him to anger with their high places, and moved him to jealousy with their carved images. Therefore, the Lord forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent he had placed among men, and delivered his strength into captivity, and his glory into the enemy's hand. Judges 2, verse 12, Psalm 78, verse 58, 60, 61. Yet God did not completely forsake his people. There was always a remnant who were true to Jehovah, and from time to time the Lord brought up faithful and courageous men to put down idolatry and deliver the Israelites from their enemies. But when the deliverer died, and the people were released from his authority, they would gradually return to their idols. This is the reason for Israel's story of backsliding and correction, of confession and deliverance, repeating itself again and again. The sad story of continual backsliding. The king of Mesopotamia, the king of Moab, after them the Philistines and the Canaanites of Hazor, led by Sisera, became oppressors of Israel, one right after the next. Othniel, Shamgar, Ehud, Deborah, and Barak were raised up as deliverers of their people. But again, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian. The Midianites had been nearly destroyed by Israel in the days of Moses, but they had since become numerous and powerful. They thirsted for revenge, and now that the protecting hand of God was removed from Israel, the opportunity had come. The whole land suffered from their violent destructions. Like a plague of locusts, they spread over the country, coming as soon as the harvests began to ripen and staying until the last fruits had been gathered. They stripped the fields of their increase and robbed and mistreated the inhabitants. The Israelites who were living in the open country were forced to seek safety in fortresses or even find shelter in caves among the mountains. For 7 years, this oppression continued. Then, as the people in their distress confessed their sins, God again raised up a helper for them. God's call came to Gideon to deliver his people while he was threshing wheat. Not daring to beat it out on the ordinary threshing floor, he had gone to a spot near the winepress. The season of ripe grapes was still far off, and no one yet took much notice of the vineyards. As Gideon worked in secrecy, he sadly thought about the condition of Israel and how to break the oppressor's yoke. How the Lord called Gideon. Suddenly, the angel of the Lord appeared and spoke to him with the words, "The Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor." "Oh, my Lord," was his answer, "if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about? The Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites." The messenger of heaven replied, "Go in this might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites." "Have I not sent you?" Gideon wanted some sign that the one now speaking to him was the covenant angel, who had performed mighty miracles for Israel in the past. Hurrying to his tent, from what little he had, Gideon prepared a kid and unleavened bread, which he brought out and set before him. But the angel told him, "Take the meat and the unleavened bread, and lay them on this rock, and pour out the broth." Gideon did this, and then the sign he was looking for was given. With the staff in his hand, the angel touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and a flame bursting from the rock consumed the sacrifice. Then the angel vanished. Gideon's father, Joash, who had participated in the apostasy of Israel, had built a large altar to Baal at Ophrah. The Lord commanded Gideon to destroy this altar and to set up an altar to Jehovah over the rock where the offering had been consumed and present a sacrifice to the Lord there. The work of offering sacrifices had been committed to the priests and restricted to the altar at Shiloh, but the one who had established the ritual service had power to change its requirements. Gideon must declare war on idolatry before going out to battle with the enemies of his people. Gideon performed the work in secret, accomplishing everything in one night with the help of his servants. The men of Ophrah were very angry when they came the next morning to offer their worship to Baal. Joash, who had been told of the angel's visit, stood in defense of his son. "Would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who will plead for him be put to death by morning." If Baal could not defend his own altar, how could he be trusted to protect his worshippers? All thoughts of harming Gideon were put away. When he sounded the trumpet of war, the men of Ophrah were among the first to join him. Messengers were sent to his own tribe of Manasseh, and also to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and all answered the call. How could Gideon be sure? Gideon prayed, "If you will save Israel by my hand as you have said, look, I shall put a fleece of wool in the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." In the morning, the fleece was wet, while the ground was dry. But now a doubt came, since wool naturally absorbs moisture when there is any in the air, the test might not be decisive. So he asked that the sign be reversed, and his request was granted. Encouraged, Gideon led his forces out to battle the invaders. All the Midianites and Amalekites, the people of the east, gathered together, and they crossed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. The entire force under Gideon's command was only 32,000 men. But with the vast army of the enemy spread out before him, the word of the Lord came. "The people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, 'My own hand has saved me.' Now therefore, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, 'Whoever is fearful and afraid, let him turn and depart at once from Mount Gilead.' Those unwilling to face danger and hardship would not add any strength to the armies of Israel." Gideon was astonished at the statement that his army was too large, but the Lord saw the pride and unbelief in the hearts of his people. Motivated by the appeals of Gideon, they had promptly enlisted, but many were filled with fear when they saw the huge army of Midian. Yet, if Israel had won, those very ones would have taken glory to themselves instead of crediting the victory to God. Only 300 left. Gideon obeyed the Lord's direction, and with a heavy heart, he saw more than 2/3 of his soldiers leave for their homes. Again, the word of the Lord came to him. "The people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Then it will be that of whom I say to you, 'This one shall go with you,' the same shall go with you. And of whomever I say to you, 'This shall not go with you,' the same shall not go." The people were led down to the waterside, expecting to make an immediate advance against the enemy. A few quickly took a little water in the hand and sucked it up as they went on. But almost all bowed on their knees and slowly drank from the surface of the stream. Just 300 out of 10,000 took the water in their hands. These 300 were selected, and all the rest were permitted to return to their homes. Those who were determined to care for their own wants in a time of danger were not to be trusted in an emergency. The 300 chosen men not only possessed courage and self-control, they were also men of faith. They had not defiled themselves with idolatry. God could direct them, and through them, he could bring about deliverance for Israel. God is not honored as much by great numbers as he is by the character of those who serve him. The Israelites were stationed on the edge of a hill overlooking the valley where the invaders' camp was spread out as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number as the sand by the seashore in multitude. Gideon trembled as he thought of the battle that was coming in the morning, but the Lord told him to go down to the camp of the Midianites. He would hear something there for his encouragement. Waiting in the darkness and silence, he heard a soldier telling a dream to his companion. "To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent and struck it so that it fell and overturned, and the tent collapsed." The other soldier answered in words that stirred the heart of that unseen listener. "This is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp." Gideon recognized the voice of God speaking through those Midianite strangers. Returning to the few men under his command, he said, "Arise, for the Lord has delivered the camp of Midian into your hand." God's simple battle plan. Through God's direction, a plan of attack was suggested. The 300 men were divided into three companies. Every man was given a trumpet and a torch that was concealed in a clay pitcher. The men were stationed so that they would approach the Midianite camp from different directions. In the dead of night, at a signal from Gideon's war horn, the three companies blew their trumpets. Then, breaking their pitchers and waving the blazing torches, they rushed toward the enemy with the terrible war cry, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon!" The sleeping army was suddenly awakened. The soldiers saw the light of flaming torches on every side. They heard the sound of trumpets with the cry of the attackers in every direction. Believing that they were at the mercy of an overwhelming force, the Midianites were panic-stricken. With wild cries of alarm, they fled in panic, and mistaking their own companions for enemies, they killed one another. As news of the victory spread, thousands of the Israelites who had been dismissed to their homes returned and joined in chasing their fleeing enemies. Gideon sent messengers to the tribe of Ephraim, rousing them to intercept the escaping soldiers at the southern fords. Meanwhile, with his 300 soldiers, exhausted but still in pursuit, Gideon crossed the stream close behind those who had already reached the farther side and overtook Zeba and Zalmunna, the two princes who escaped with 15,000 men. He scattered their force completely and captured and killed the leaders. 120,000 of the invaders died, and the power of the Midianites was broken. They were never again able to make war on Israel. No words can describe the terror of the surrounding nations when they learned what simple means had succeeded against the power of a bold, warlike people.
The leader God chose to overthrow the Midianites was not a ruler, a priest, or a Levite. He thought of himself as the least important in his father's house. But he was distrustful of himself and was willing to follow the guidance of the Lord. God selects those whom he can best use. Before honor is humility. Proverbs 15, verse 33. He will make them strong by joining their weakness to his might, and wise by connecting their ignorance with his wisdom. Few can be trusted with any large amount of responsibility or success without becoming forgetful of their dependence on God. This is why, in choosing instruments for his work, the Lord passes by people whom the world honors as great, talented, and brilliant. They are proud and feel qualified to act without God's counsel. Trust in God and obedience to his will are as essential in spiritual warfare as they were to Gideon and Joshua in their battles with the Canaanites. God is just as willing to work with the efforts of his people now and to accomplish great things through weak instruments. God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. Ephesians 3, verse 20. When the men of Israel had joined together to Gideon's call against the Midianites, the tribe of Ephraim had remained behind. Gideon did not send them any special appeal, and they saw this as an excuse to not join their brothers. But when news of Israel's triumph reached them, the Ephraimites were envious because they had not shared it. After the spectacular defeat of the Midianites, they followed up the battle and helped complete the victory. Even so, they were jealous and angry, as if Gideon had been following his own will and judgment. They did not see God's hand in Israel's triumph, and this showed that they were unworthy to be chosen as his special instruments. Returning with the trophies of victory, they angrily reprimanded Gideon.
"Why have you done this to us by not calling us when you went to fight with the Midianites?"
Gideon demonstrates humility.
"What have I done now in comparison with you?" said Gideon. "Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God has delivered into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb, and Zeb. And what was I able to do in comparison with you?" Gideon's modest answer, which revealed a spirit of courtesy rarely seen, soothed the anger of the men of Ephraim, and they returned in peace to their homes. In their gratitude for deliverance from the Midianites, the people of Israel proposed to Gideon that he should become their king. This directly went against the principles of the theocracy. God was the king of Israel, and if they placed a man on the throne, it would be a rejection of their divine sovereign. Gideon recognized this fact, and his answer shows that his motives were true and noble. "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." But Gideon fell into another error, which brought disaster on his family and on all Israel. The time of inactivity that follows a great struggle is often filled with greater danger than is the period of conflict, and Gideon was now exposed to this danger. A spirit of unrest came over him, and instead of waiting for divine guidance, he began to plan for himself. Because he had been commanded to offer a sacrifice on the rock where the angel appeared to him, Gideon concluded that he had been appointed as a priest. Without waiting for divine permission, he decided to establish a system of worship similar to the one carried on at the tabernacle. With the strong popular feeling in his favor, he did not have any problems in carrying out his plan. At his request, all the earrings of gold taken from the Midianites were given to him as his share of the spoil. The people also collected other expensive materials, together with the richly adorned garments of the princes of Midian. From these materials, Gideon made an ephod and a breastplate, an imitation of those worn by the high priest. These actions turned out to be a trap to himself and his family, as well as to Israel. The unauthorized worship led many of the people to finally turn from the Lord and serve idols. After Gideon's death, many people, including his own family, joined in apostasy. The people were led away from God by the very man who once brought down their idolatry. Those who stand in the highest positions may lead others astray. The wisest person makes mistakes. The strongest person may hesitate and stumble. Our only safety lies in trusting our life completely to Him who has said, "Follow me." After the death of Gideon, the people of Israel accepted his illegitimate son Abimelech as their king, who, to increase his power, murdered all but one of Gideon's lawful children. Israel's cruel way of dealing with the house of Gideon was what might be expected from a people who showed such great ingratitude to God. More backsliding and more misery.
After the death of Abimelech, the rule of judges who respected God helped to hold back idolatry for a time. But before long, the people returned to the practices of the heathen around them. Apostasy quickly brought punishment. The Ammonites conquered the eastern tribes of Israel and, crossing the Jordan River, invaded the territory of Judah and Ephraim. On the west, the Philistines came up from their plain beside the sea, burning and looting wherever they went. Israel seemed to be hopelessly under the power of unyielding enemies. Again, the people looked for help from him whom they had forsaken and insulted.
the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, saying, "We have sinned against you, because we have both forsaken our God and served the Baals." But the people did not mourn because they had dishonored God by breaking his holy law, but because their sins had brought suffering on themselves. True repentance is a determined turning away from evil. The Lord answered them through one of his prophets. "Did I not deliver you from the Egyptians and from the Amorites and from the people of Ammon and from the Philistines? You cried out to me, and I delivered you from their hand. Yet you have forsaken me and served other gods. Therefore, I will deliver you no more. Go and cry out to the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in your time of distress." The Israelites now humbled themselves before the Lord. So they put away the foreign gods from among them and served the Lord. And the Lord's heart of love could no longer endure the misery of Israel. Oh, the long-suffering mercy of our God! When his people put away the sins that had shut out his presence, he heard their prayers and began to work for them immediately. He raised up a deliverer named Jephthah, who made war against the Ammonites and completely destroyed their power. At this time, Israel had suffered under the oppression of her enemies for 18 years, but the people again forgot the lesson taught by suffering. As his people returned to their evil ways, the Lord permitted them to be oppressed by powerful enemies, the Philistines. For many years, they were constantly harassed and at times completely conquered by this cruel and warlike nation. They had mingled with these idolaters, uniting in pleasure and in worship, until they seemed to be one with them in spirit and interest. Then these professed friends of Israel became their bitterest enemies and tried to bring about their destruction. The Bible plainly teaches that there can be no harmony between the people of God and the world. Satan works through those who do not love God, under the cover of pretended friendship, to entice God's people into sin. When their defense is removed, then Satan will lead his agents to turn against them and seek to destroy them.